Okay.
There was a real book dealer up in downtown San Francisco called Warren Howell, H-O-W-E-L-L. He died many years ago too. You know, I struck up an acquaintanceship with him, and I went in there on one of my trips up to San Francisco, and there sitting on the shelf were three books. Let me see if I remember these. There was Lerner's, his Baruch von Bergerberg, 1619, of which I knew there was only approximately 12 known copies. A beautiful copy in a red slipcase. It had come from the Honeyman Library. And Honeyman, by the way, was a great collector of early science books. His library was auctioned quite a few years ago, and it must have been quite a sight to see, because he had slipcases made in bright crimson Morocco, gilt-lettered Morocco, and everything was in, the whole thing was nothing but blinding crimson Morocco. Anyway,
I think we have some of those at Leah.
Do you? Yeah. I have at least two of those, and again, I left them in the slipcase. One of them, by the way, is a rare boil. So I bought that, let me see, there was the other one was, my memory. Let's see, what was the other one? All those three books.
That's John Doreen.
Oh, you know, Lazarus Erker's, can't remember the title, but anyway, it's the first complete edition of 1580, it's actually the second edition, a Proprio Buchlein, I think it's called, and then it's all in German and so on. It's 1580, it's the first one, and it was one that he published just immediately before he died. So it might say this is the one by which he was to be remembered, not the first, which was 1574. And then the third one was, I can't remember the name. It was anyway, 1738, a gigantic folio about 7.5 inches thick, and it was a big talk, about 15 inches tall, and quite a hefty book, a beautiful copy, gorgeous copy. And I know I think the author's name given to me, but I just can't recall it. I guess because I'm tired, but I already had the French edition of that, but this is a very rare first German edition, the very first appearance of that work. And I think the whole, all three books, now mind you, we're talking now, let's see, we got back to California in 1969. This is right around 1970, when I was still at Bechtel. And I believe all three books were right around $5,000 for all three. And I remember we were driving along over at Half Moon Bay, do you remember that, Jeannie?
I do.
And I just couldn't get those three books out of my mind. I think, gosh, you know, those, I've just got to have those books. How much am I going to pay them? I just can't afford them. Anyway, we were coming back through from Half Moon Bay through Pescadero, winding through the hills there, down the other side in the River City. So I thought, well, I don't care, I'm going to go for it. So I talked to Warren Howell, and I arranged a time payment. I suppose that's where I managed to acquire these things. I should add that I've arranged time payments with quite a few dealers. And since they know I always pay promptly on time, and these guys, you know, they're in business to try to liberate money out of these rarities. They have to eat too, so, you know, I won the books, and they won the money, so we worked out some deal. So I got all kinds of deals with various dealers. And there was one dealer in London that would send the books over by sea mail, but the invoice always by air mail, and then complain that I haven't, his name was Hugh K. Elliott, he was a refugee from Czechoslovakia. His real name I never knew, but he renamed himself Hugh K. Elliott. And he just wrote these letters complaining, this is back in the 50s, why haven't you paid for that book yet? I write back by email, I haven't yet received the book. You know, I reserve the right to see the book before I've actually paid for it. So he used to get kind of irritated, but the guy was obviously under financial pressure. That's the reason he was trying to shake the cage a bit. But apart from that, I have a very, very good reputation with the dealers. I always pay promptly, I'm always within the market. So I said, I'll never keep you waiting more than 30 days, and I honor that. So I gained a reputation of being very dependable. And so, of course, then they not only trade with me a lot, but they would find books and say, did you know about this book? Would you be interested in this book? And they described it, and I had never heard of it, or it was, you know, it was a crash, so I went ahead and bought it. Now, if I could pay for it immediately, I did. If not, I'd have time payment. And another thing I should say, I absolutely detest debt. So I would never go into debt. I'd never borrow on my credit card or anything like that, ever. I'm still the same way. My father taught me, he said, son, if you can't afford it, don't buy it. And I've always lived by that precept. How are we doing?
We're fine.
All right. But anyway, getting back to Sondheim, that was a terrible shock to me. Of course, I was invited to a funeral, but I couldn't. I was doing consulting work at the time in South Dakota and so on. I just couldn't, and other places, I just couldn't take time. And I thought, well, I hardly even knew this man. I only met him a couple of times in apartment correspondence. And anyway, that was the end of Sondheim. But it really disturbed me a lot. To see him as the only person I've known that actually came in, went in a deep depression, possibly. I think the reality is he was in a terrible state anyway, psychologically, and this was just another straw that broke poor guy's back. I'm mixing metaphors here. But he was not healthy psychologically. What else do you want? You said you had questions. I could have had a drink. I'm getting dry.
Did you interact with, you've talked a lot about dealers, and it sounds like most of your dealers were in England at first, but then you started working with dealers in this country.
Oh yes, very soon. I started working with New York dealers. And
were there any dealers on the West Coast?
Yes, San Francisco, and Zeitman, Jake Zeitman down in Los Angeles. Everybody called him Jake, you know. I dealt with him.
Did you interact with other collectors?
Yes, I soon heard about Bill Cole, who recently died, when was it, a couple of years ago? And I noticed, since I was living then in Westchester, which is just by the airport, and he was living in Pacific Palisades, he was a schoolmaster, didn't have that much money, didn't have any children, but he was married to Nora Cole, whose mother apparently was, I won't say wealthy, but not poor, you know. So they had the household bought. Bill was about 12 years older than me. And so I was eager to go over and see his library. And we drove over, didn't we? Do you remember that one in Westchester?
I remember.
And when I went in there, the first thing that impressed me was just what dilapidated copies they were. Even when you see my library, and I've done my best to get good looking copies on the shelf, but I can't stand these horrible looking dilapidated things. Root spores, no spine, or that's what Bill had. Cracked spines. He never polished his books, he never glued any leather back onto where it's supposed to be. And there was a label missing, he never got a label made. It was just as is. I don't think he ever dusted his books, he never took an eraser and lightly erased any, you know, thumbprints or anything like that, which I did. I didn't take off any signatures or anything important, but I mean, if I could lighten some dirty thumbprint which had come off with a light eraser, I'd do it without raising the nap of the paper. But so I really looked after my books, and I went in there, and of course I was suitably impressed because he'd been collecting, I don't think as long as me chronologically, but he had he was 12 years old, so he had sort of a jump on the prices. And so, but his collecting sphere was mainly from about 1700 to about 1850. So, right around then, you might see the birth of modern chemistry, sort of, well, pre-modern chemistry. And he had about, as I remember, he had four items by Boyle in pretty dilapidated condition, and nothing in the 16th. Oh, yes, he had one 16th century book, I think that, what was that? No, that was the The New Jewel of Health, 1876 by Gesner. But apart from that, it was nothing. But I was impressed, and I was unimpressed. I was impressed by the number of books he had, but I was similarly unimpressed with the condition. And Jake was known for that. And he wrote, some dealers have the view that, well, if it's always got to be valuable, then I'm going to stick it to you. But other dealers who are more reputable say, you know, a poor copy is a poor copy, and we're going to charge for it accordingly. And I did buy some books from Jake, which I subsequently replaced, because they lacked plates and things like that. He wasn't altogether an honest man. And although he was known in the trade as a doing on American dealers, I had to be very careful with Jake. He was a little bit twisted. Crooked, I think is the word one could use. But he can't sue me for that now, because he's dead too. But what I'm saying is, a lot of people, and I know when Bill came over and saw my library, he said, "My goodness, what gorgeous copy you got. Where did you get things?" And I, like a fool, told him when I was dealing with Richard Gurney in London. Richard, by the way, was the son of a very, very wealthy banking family who didn't want to go into banking, but he loved old books, particularly old chemistry books. And you remember, we went there in Kensington, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He took us out to lunch at a local pub.
Yeah.
We had sausage and mash, you know, right down the road there. And mm-hmm. He was a very, very nice man. He's still alive, by the way, as far as I know. But he went out of business when he got to be 73. I said, I looked at him, I said, "Why, you're still selling books. Why don't you go on?" He said, "Well," he said, "Roy, he must be about, I suppose, 83 by now, 84. He said, "Roy, I keep making these silly mistakes." He's very accurate in his descriptions. His prices are reasonable. And if there's something missing, he would tell you. And so he told me, "I keep making these silly mistakes. I'm getting old. I'm not going to put out any more catalogs." So one day I got a little catalog, a little blurb in the front, and said, "Unfortunately, dear ladies and gentlemen, this is my last catalog. Just, you know, basically, I'm going to hang it up." He didn't. He went on selling books, you might say, to a few people, including myself, but it was basically all over with him. And I was very, very sorry about that. But anyway, Bill Cole started a trade with him, and of course, Cole, C, coming before N, I suppose, you know, they would mail out things in alphabetical order, and of course, very often he'd scoop me by a day, and that irritated me a bit, but anyway. That's all part of the game. What with Tom Hammer scooping me in at the Sotheby's auctions and Christie's auction and Bill Cole. But I was always willing to share my information, you know.
Did you scoop anybody?
Oh, I'm sure much of that.
Yeah.
Because I saw a girl in that bandwagon too. I thought, well, if they're going to scoop me, I could advance copies of the auction, and I would bid and so on. Sometimes it was lucky, sometimes it wasn't. Jeremy Norman was another a person up in San Francisco I became quite associated with, and he'd go over to London, the auction, and say, "Oh, I heard the name Neville called out again." "Yeah, well, okay, good." And so I bought a lot of very, very lovely books through Gretton by auction. But so where did my books come from? My own browsing in various places wherever I'd be sent on my travels as a consultant or ACS meeting thing. I would go to some lectures, but I must confess that if I was in a strange city, the bookstores sort of took precedence, so I went scouting. I remember finding a good Thomas Thompson book on mineralogy in Dayton, Ohio, of all places. I think it was $10. It needed to be backing, so I had it reback. Beautiful copy. $10.
I wanted to ask you if you had any serendipitous experiences.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll tell you, there was a place down in Los Angeles, actually in Long Beach. It was called, I can't remember, somebody's Acres of Books. Acres of Books. And all the books were priced somewhere between $1 and $2. That was one half an hour, you know, it's stuck in my library. And yours probably too. So anyway, I picked up one book, it was a modern book, and it turned out to be had a signature of Lord Kelvin in it. Lord Kelvin's book. I forgot. It was around about, I can't remember exactly, around about 1900, 1910, something like that. Lord Kelvin's copy. I could not believe it. And another one I picked up, again, from Gurney, was the second edition of Perrin's Isotopes. I think the first edition, what is it? Gosh, I can't remember these things too well. Is it 1903? I can't remember anymore. Anyway, it's the second edition. And it is belonged to another famous, it might have been Lord Kelvin also. It's inscribed by Perrin to Kelvin, I think, or something. And then there was Ludwig Mond, you know, the nickel process. Mm-hmm. I picked up his book, you know, it came from his library, from the library of Ludwig Mond. Nice book, right? I think I have at least two or three of those. No, CHF. And then I picked up another book, an older book, I think it was an 18th century, but I don't remember which particular one it was. But somebody like Principe will dig it out anyway if you ask him. And it said Julius B. Cohen. And he was wound up being Jewish, and he died in a Nazi concentration camp. So, you know, and I always sort of, when, in 1942, this is one of my books, my mother, bought me, and 1942, I was pretty young. I checked out of the local library, the Lenin Library, we could borrow the privilege, you know, Julius B. Cohen's Practical Organic Chemistry. And I kept it out for about 6 weeks and had to pay a fine on it. And finally I said, Mum, I just wish you'd buy me this book. It was 7 shillings and 6 pence. So for my birthday, she bought me a copy of the Julius B. Cohen's Practical Organic Chemistry. So I kept that in my little lab, in my little bookshelf of chemistry books, practical books, and it's got a few splashes and little stains, and you know, like lab books have. And it was by Julius B. Cohen, so that name became very familiar to me. And of course, when I looked up the biography of Cohen, I think it might have been on DSB or something like that. I found out the poor guy died in a concentration camp. And I wrote something about that when I described a book about the bestiality of the Nazis or something like that. And I didn't go on too long about it, but I made the point that I strongly disagreed with their philosophy. Have you read any of my descriptions in my catalog?
I have an excerpt here. Somewhere.
Oh, another little thing too about my catalog. Unless it went got too long-winded and you know expanded too much, it turned out about 7 or 8 three-ring volumes, about 3 or 4 inches thick. Anyway, and I thought whether it's newsprint keeper or some little tiny pamphlet, it only gets a maximum on one page. That's all it's going to get.
I have a portion, this is the Priestley, I think the Priestley.
Can I see that? Oh, yeah, yeah, that's my writing, yeah. Recognize it.
And Elsa tells me that you like Denis Duveen's style.
Yes, yes. A combination of Ferguson and Duveen.
Did you ever meet Duveen?
I wrote to him. I had some correspondence, probably about 6 or 7 letters. But right about the time I started to correspond, just like I did with Edelstein. Edelstein, when I met him in New York, he invited myself and Sister St. John's Nepomucene.
Yes.
Paris, old nun there. He couldn't get through his wall of talk. Anyway, he took Sister St. John Nepomucene and I over to his beautiful mansion on the banks of, it was called the Englewood Cliffs, I think, New Jersey.
In New Jersey, yes.
And I went in this magnificent place. It was like a Tudor mansion. huge room, and saw this, the room even bigger than this one, a line of bookshelves. Did you ever go there?
No.
And he had so many books, and he has a line of, big ones at the back and small ones in front. So, he muttered something about his wife didn't want any more books in any other room, so that was the room, so to speak. But he took us out to a very, very nice dinner and so on, and I really enjoyed Sidney Clinton very much. I thought his catalogue was a disaster. You know, Elstein's catalogue, compiled by a fellow called Moshe Rowan over in Jerusalem. It was a mess. Mistakes of spelling, mistakes of date. I said like 1929 and 1729, I'm just making this up, but it was just, grossly. It's shouted at you, this is a totally undependable book. You didn't know what the first edition or the 19th edition, you didn't know anything about it. So I tried to do a lot better than that. So I think this is pretty good for
you. Oh, it is. I brought this along for you on Duveen.
I still have Duveen. I have the original catalog plus the Krauss catalog.
Well, this is a brief biography of Duveen.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, let's see that.
Aaron Ide.
Yeah, I know him. I correspond with him.
At the 25th anniversary of the Dexter Award.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Aaron Ide wrote a book on the first 25 winners. This was 1980-something.
Yeah.
And he only printed 3 copies.
Oh.
And I'm in the process of scanning one of these and converting it into a new document.
Oh, good.
But this is the biography of Duveen that I wrote, that I brought for you.
Well, thank you
for what it's only a few pages, but since I knew you liked Duveen's style, I thought I'd pass that along.
As I say, I did write to Duveen because I remember this was back in about 1957, I think, or something like that. And I proudly told him about some of the books that I had, like Gerard's Turnbull and a few other things like that. And he wrote back to say, well, this is obviously some young guy. I think he's 25 years older than me. He's very polite, Tom, and say, well, nice little guy, but, hardly worth keeping up with. So I did keep up with him. As I said, I must have written about 3 or 4 letters, maybe 3 perhaps, and got about 3 letters back. But then he fell out with his wife Patricia Duveen. There was an article, by the way, in the book collection, I think it was about 1951 or so, on describing some of his high spots. And of course I used that as a guide too. And but then apparently they had a divorce, and he, next thing I knew, was he was down in Brazil.
Yes, I think that's mentioned in there.
And then the next thing I knew was he'd married, and a baby was on the way. So I know I did write to him, not because of that, but I didn't know where to write, started it. But born 1910, see, I was 26, well, 16 years difference. I said 25, but consider a different generation completely. But he's a nice fellow. But then again, some of his copies are not terribly good copies. But I know because I actually bought some, a duplicate from his library. And his little red book plate, the one with the faded, I call them not gold but brass, brass printed, But I have several. In fact, I think I got at least one boil from Duveen. It went by Heller and then eventually ended up with me. I even got some duplicates from the Houghton Library in Harvard. I thought, well, that's crazy to start selling things like that.
When Sidney became active in the history division, these people, Duveen and Klickstein and others, were all involved in that division, and they all, this is, I think, what brought them together was their book collecting.
Yeah.
They had an interest in the history of chemistry, you did, but their common bond was the book collecting.
Well, that Duveen and Klickstein bibliography of Lavoisier, that big thick volume, there was a subsequent one by Duveen himself, much thinner, that was written by Klickstein.
almost, yeah, with Devine looking over his shoulder, but I mean, most of it was QuickSign's work. You know, it's called Devine QuickSign. And anyway, Devine decided to concentrate on everything written by and about Lavoisier. And I think he probably assembled the biggest library of Savarin symbol on that subject.